part of their healing methodologies and initiations to wake up the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I became aware of, and now that we talk about strong heart, is how people's lives became hateful to them personally.
Mm-hmm.
Because of history, because of what they're hearing in the air. You know, the that image that was created for us as indigenous people, as inferior, stupid Indian, lazy, crazy, drunken, all of those things came through the air. And it hit the young minds. And I think of the babies that heard those words in the air and the tonality with it. That's a weakening energy. So we need to reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said universe, I understood, because I understand universe means one song.
One song. That's right.
Yeah. Just think of that whole universe is one song. You know, it's sort of...
We're a note in the one song.
Yeah.
So, we are a note in the one song. Each of us is notable.
This is so cool, because even when I said sound mind, sound body, sound spirit, sound heart, it's about the sounds that affect our mind.
Yeah To have a sound mind is to have a healing mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things I wanted to say is that what advice do you have for people that feel lost, you know, without no grounding, connectedness with culture or identity stuff, you know? Because I think identity stuff is one of the, because identity actually means sameness. You have this hunger to want to belong,
mm-hmm.
to be same, you know, if not, you're isolated. Like an island somewhere, you know, don't feel connectedness. So what kind of advice would you give to people that are feeling that way?
Well, you know, I had two major singing teachers in my life. And the first one was a Kiowa man. And his wife was a Kiowa as well. And sometimes I would go to their home on Friday, and we'd sing all weekend, have a singing session Friday, then Saturday we'd have breakfast, and if it was a ceremony or anything happened, we'd go to the ceremony and sing there, and then Sunday we'd have another singing session and maybe a lunch, then I'd go home. And my second singing teacher was from Fort Peck, Montana, from Poplar, Montana. His name was Dale Running Bear. I was studying with Dale one time, and he said, "Hey, Lee, look," and he pulled some grass, and he threw it up, it blew in the wind. And he pointed at the grass blowing in the wind, and he said, "That's how the Indians are becoming," which is the word that he used at that time, the word Indian.
Yeah.
"That's how the Indians are becoming." And he pushed his finger into the dirt. He said, "We're losing the root of our existence." And the root of our existence, going back to what we said earlier, is the knowledge that we're born with a gift, that we come here for a purpose. He said, "Lee, you're going to meet men in your life, Native men, who will tell you they don't even know why they were born. They have no sense of purpose, no sense of direction." He said, "You got to tell them. You got to tell them, Lee, they have a gift. You have to give them that." That one piece of knowledge alone can give, you know, meaning and purpose to a person's life, that the idea that we have a gift, that we come here with something that, you know, gives our life direction, it gives our life movement and purpose. Remember, I was counseling a man one time at Round Lake and told me that he, you know, didn't like himself. In fact, he told me he had tried to kill himself. He actually shot himself.
Mm.
But he lived. And he said to me, "I don't know why I was born." And I remember what Dale said. Dale said, "You're going to meet men that will tell you they don't know why they were born."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Brother, I'm so happy I'm so happy I can tell you why you were born. You brought a gift here. Before you left the spirit world to come here, the ancestors gave you something to bring. You didn't come here with nothing. As one of my teachers from the Quileute Reservation in Washington State said, no one comes here with nothing. Everybody comes with something. Now you have a gift. That one piece of knowledge can turn a person's life around. And so how does that relate to identity? Well, we talked about the day of the chair, about how emotions relate to our becoming. Now, here's a sentence, Jerry, that's really important in my life. Instinct. Human beings have instinct. You take a baby's foot, you push it like that, the foot's going to go like that. Instinct, Carl Jung said, when instinct becomes conscious, it's emotion. So somebody comes behind you and makes a loud noise, you go like that, but then you feel, then you're angry, then you get fight or flight, which becomes hope or fear, the organizing principles of emotion. So instinct becomes emotion. Emotion structure is values. And so take, for instance, courage. Courage is a tribal value a lot of tribes share.
Mm-hmm.
Courage, like all values, is made up of emotions. So what are the emotions in courage? Well, one is fear. But there has to be love or compassion or something to overcome the fear. So every value is two or more emotions. So instinct becomes emotion. Emotions become values. Values structure as identity. What is identity? It's how you feel and how you value your physical self. It's how you feel and how you value your mind, your capacity to learn. It's how you feel and how you value your spirit and your culture. It's how you feel and value your emotional self, your heart, to be on a path of life where you're developing your heart, where you're developing heart knowledge, where you're teaching and training your heart. And at the center of our being, at the center of the medicine wheel, it's how we feel about what we can be. Those are the aspects of identity. So there's body awareness, self-concept in the mind, self-image in the spirit, self-esteem in the heart, and volition at the center, will. I'm forgetting the word for that right now, but anyway, we need to teach children what they need to know to feel totally good about their physical being. So we should eliminate put-downs. You know, even a joking put-down of a child, you know, of their hair color or their skin color, you're too light, you're too dark, you're too short, you're too fat, you're too skinny. You know, by a significant parent or a significant other at a young age can follow them their whole life, or is going to end up feeling bad about their big nose or something. No, a guy, my friend told me, I have a big nose. I said, you know, I've never even noticed or would have ever thought that you have a big nose. I don't think it's that big, but he did.
Yeah.
See, it's not how intelligent you are that determines how you're going to be able to learn. It's how you feel about your intelligence. If you're a genius, but you, I had a counselor, a native woman one time. It was a test of genius that found it impossible to do well in school, couldn't go to college because she felt she was stupid. She was made to feel stupid by those around her when she was growing up. You're dumb. You know, you're a dumb Indian kid. And that had to be removed before she could progress. She went on to become a teacher, a Montessori mm-hmm. teacher. If you can be a nice looking person, but if you feel you're ugly, that's going to limit what you do. So we want to make sure that in raising our children, that they have a good feeling about their body, a good feeling about their intelligence. It's not how intelligent you are. It's how you use your intelligence. Every human being is intelligent, and as the people, we've had our intelligence put down. We need to reaffirm and revalidate our intelligence all the time. I'm always telling the Native people around me, my family and others, you're intelligent. People do intelligent things, I point them out. You're intelligent, Jerry. You look mm-hmm. where it's up to the dictionary. I've always been impressed with your intelligence. True, I'm saying this sincerely now. You're an intelligent man. We need to affirm each other's intelligence. Now, I admire your intelligence. We need to affirm our culture and our spirit. And here's a real important point for human growth. We need to learn in the realm of self-esteem to have a feeling about how we feel. So there's a lot of people that go through life feeling, but never really reflecting on what they feel. So they don't grow emotionally. But once you can have a feeling about what you feel, a big word for that is meta-emotional state. So I was counseling a guy when, you know how a lot of people are angry in our community. So I had counseling this client. He was an exceptionally angry man. So finally, I got in the counseling session to the point where he realized his anger. And he stopped and said, oh, man, I've been angry for 25 years. And a classic emotional statement, I said, well, how do you feel about that? He didn't know he was angry. But now he can have a feeling about the fact that he's angry. How do you feel about being angry? Well, I don't like that. Well, now you can do something about it because you're aware. You have a meta-emotional state. You have a feeling about how you're feeling. We need to make sure our children have that, that they think about feelings. You know, I was hiring a PhD student one time at UBC for a research project I was doing. Just got a PhD, bright, young, you know, incredibly intelligent, happened to be a student that had just got their PhD. I said, this research project involves looking at people's emotions. We're doing some talking circles on the west side of, you know, on the east side of Vancouver and East Van, and it involves emotion. Oh, she said, emotion. I never thought about that. Just got a PhD in education. Yeah. Emotions. I never thought about emotions in my whole life. That's not good. People need to be aware of their hearts, aware of their heart energies. So instinct becomes emotion. Emotion structures as values. Values become our identity. And our identity should move towards that higher sense of vision that comes through storytelling, that comes through service. And then that becomes a process of becoming in life. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, becoming is important.
The key to it all is to know that you have a gift. Yeah. You are my gift. I am your gift.
Yeah.
We are each other's gifts. We're not each other's enemies. We are born as gifts to each other. When you were born, you brought something. It's for me. It's not for you. You're my gift.
Yeah.
And your gift. You know, I'm gifting you here today. You're gifting me. There's 8 billion gifts on the world.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, there are no enemies. There's nobody that's born an enemy. We're only born gifts.
Yeah.
We are born as a gift to each other. And I think that's the key to.
Yeah.
You know, if you, like we said earlier, if you don't get your gift in life, you miss your life. That's a sad thing.
Yeah.
That's why we're so lucky to have a culture in which we have ceremonial processes where we can find our gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole, when I, you know, I was suicidal at one point in my life. And so I went to see this elder in my community and told him that, I remember you told me you wanted to teach me. You know, I wasn't telling him how I was feeling and stuff. He looks at me, he said, okay. And he took me up the mountain and put me on a fast.
Oh.
And that's where I got my vision of what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
My purpose.
Yeah. My purpose.
And I haven't stopped since.
Yeah. You know?
So that's that. Because when I first was there, he left me there, took all my clothes, you know, and left me in this little lodge that we built. And he says, you got to look at yourself. The first 2 days, I'm thinking, this is stupid. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. Why am I doing this? You know, and I wanted to go home, but I didn't have any clothes. You know, so I stayed there. And the third day, because when I was there for 2 days, I was asking myself, what are you doing here anyway? And the answer in my mind was, you are fasting. And the third day, I asked that question again. I am fasting. I started to take ownership for the first time in my life. Wow. Probably since I was a child. As a child, we're pure, basically. So I started to use I words for myself. And it changed that whole experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I went up on my first fast, which was with the help of Don Matheson, I mentioned earlier, and you mentioned the hummingbird, what happened to me is a dragonfly landed on my altar.
Oh.
And actually shed his skin and flew off and left his shell there.
Huh.
And I looked at that and I thought, that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of work to do in myself. I have a lot I have to let go of. I was angry at one time. Angry, I mean, I was an angry person as a young person in the protest, in the demonstrations, you know, in this and that. And that's that dragonfly showed me that I needed to shed. I needed to shed a lot of stuff. I needed to shed my skin.
You know? You're probably like my late mother said, you know, Jerry, there are some people so angry and so mean, they got nobody to bite in the morning, they'll bite themselves. So I'm glad I didn't meet you then, Lee.
Yeah, me too. Guy asked me for the time of day and get a punch.
Well, this has been so enjoyable for me, Lee, you know, to listen and to share. Strong heart, strong mind, strong body, strong spirit. And to know that we were there as a people en masse at one time. En masse, and you're talking about the overrepresentation of diabetes and cancer and all of those things. You know, we didn't have that before.
No,
we were good. We were connected. We were living with our heart, which is compassion, which means a willing participant with other people's suffering. We were generous. We were respectful. And we could reach our potential. So that's a wish for these podcasts, is to help people find their gift and reach their potential, whatever it is. You know, so I want to thank you for coming to visit Teachings in the Air today. And I'd like to maybe have you on again at another time. And we can continue the discussion about, you know, about what we've witnessed. Because I know we've got a lot to cover. You know, like one thing we didn't talk about was dance. And healing. And it's healing too. It's a powerful healer. So I'd like to revisit that again in another point in later on in the fall or something. I'd like to get you back on again, and I'll think about things we've talked about now and then come up with other things I'd like to, you know, ask you about and share with you also my experience, like, for instance, around dance or around herbs, you know, like medicines, you know, the different healing things that are available to us as a people, free of cost, So I just like to...
You know, Jerry, I wasn't a very good dancer. One time in the powwow, I was the only guy dancing, and I got third.
You know, when we're free, when we're finally free and we're not worried about what people think about us, then we could truly dance like no one's watching. You know.
I wish I could.
And it's just pure expression.
The trouble is, when I dance, no one is watching.
Losing self-consciousness and things like that. Okay, Lee, so, you know, I always ask my guests to pick one group to send a final message to. It could be little girls, little boys, elders, grandmothers, grandfathers, or couples, or children. Just send one more message to a specific group.
Well, thinking of the grandchildren, my daughter sent me a beautiful message today, the one that is the youngest daughter. She talked about how, you know, her grandparents were fluent speakers of Okanagan. And she's entered a language program, and she went to the language nest for the first time. And she talked about how happy, you know, it was, and how she was so relieved. She was worried about it because, you know, she has a fundamental knowledge of the language, but she's not really a speaker. And she wants to be a speaker, wants to be a fluent speaker. And she talked about how happy it was to listen to, you know, her uncle talking to her. And a lot of people in the class are her relatives, so they're to be with the family for a period of time where everyone is speaking the language, you know. So that's my message. It's really important to learn. I was really inspired by what my daughter said, and I think my message is to the young people, learn your language. It's the greatest thing you can do. I told my daughter that the most valuable thing you can do is for yourself right now at this point in your life is learn your language. You'll never regret it.
Yes, I agree with you. And I know we can do it. I was in Israel. I was in Israel a couple of years ago before the pandemic.
Yeah.
The cab driver was talking to me. I said, "Are you born in Israel?" He says, "Oh no, Poland. Came here as a child, you know, my mother and we had to flee."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "And I got here, people asked me if I speak Hebrew. I say, no." And they said, "Okay, we're going to teach you." And he says, "The only ones that knew the language strong before were the rabbis doing it in ceremony."
Mm-hmm.
And I was so inspired by that we can teach each other one word at a time.
And that's where we're at right now. We're doing it in ceremony.
Yeah.
That's exactly where we're at.
Yeah. Okay, we're running out of time here, Lee, so I just wanted to thank you again, and I'll invite you again to come back to Teachings on the Air, and just so happy to have you.
is bird note. If you know how to distinguish it, the song of the red warbler is enough to tell you whether the morning is clear. No need to get out of bed or check the weather forecast. During the breeding season, between February and May, they happily sing on sunny mornings. But if it's cloudy, they won't sing, no matter the season. So this is what a clear morning sounds like. Red warblers are the tiniest weather station you can imagine, barely 5 inches long and weighing less than a AAA battery. They're endemic to the highlands of Mexico, so to hear them, you have to venture into the humid forests of pine, oak, and fir. Although you can spot red warblers in a large part of the country's territory, they don't travel between states. When taking care of their offspring, both parents care for their chicks. But they approach their nests only for a few seconds to avoid attracting predators. It's just one of their tricks for survival. Although there is evidence of a slight decline in their populations, it's not a drastic one. So hopefully, we'll have our little weather stations around for a long time. For Bird Note, I'm Lucina Melesio.